FM.News.
What happens when a consumer wants to return a roll-packed mattress? You can't really squish it back into the box. And that's one of the reasons ShareTown was born. We're talking with co-founder Georgia Levitt about how they took a company that had run out of money and went on to disrupt the reverse logistics industry. The FAM podcast starts right now. Hey, are you a mattress retailer looking to supercharge your business? Introducing Podium, your secret weapon. I use it, I'm a huge fan of it, and with Podium's AI-powered lead conversion, you can engage with customers in seconds via text, making it feel like they're talking to a friend. But hey, that's just the beginning. Podium offers texting, payments, reviews, website chat, and more all in one place. You've got to be the most responsive retailer to help customers solve those sleep problems in the moment. Harness the power of Podium today and start growing your business. Visit podium.com right now to learn more.
Welcome to the FAM podcast with Mark Kinsley. This is where the best in the betting business get even better.
Welcome to the FAM podcast. I'm so excited to have the co-founder of ShareTown, Georgia Levitt, here on the show today. Georgia, you and I have gotten to know each other over the years, and you started telling me this story about this business and how it came to be and how it solves this problem in the mattress industry. And I'm like, we have to put this on the FAM podcast because it's like this untold tale of what happens to mattresses. First of all, thank you so much for being here. It's great to have you on the show.
Hi, Mark. Thanks so much. I appreciate your time, and it's such an honor to be on your show.
Well, let's go like back to the origin story here, because the company is called ShareTown. And tell people what ShareTown does in its current state.
Yeah, currently we are a reverse logistics company. We pick up big and bulky items. And originally we started with mattresses, bed-in-the-box mattresses. That's kind of what got our foot in the door. But now we do all sorts of things, appliances, treadmills, pizza ovens, couches, furniture. But bed in the box was really like our catalyst to what we did, and kind of is still kind of our sweet spot, I would say.
All right. So how did that all happen? I remember you telling me you had a friend who worked at a bed in the box company, and they're like, hey, we've got these returns that are ending up, you know, halfway across the country or the other side of the country, and getting them back to a warehouse and doing the returns. And then, you know, a lot of people at one point were trying to take these mattresses to local charities, and the charities got overrun with mattresses at one point. I remember talking to a bunch of them. So this friend came to you and you're like, what was happening with the company at that point? And then what'd you do?
Yeah. So we previously, like 12, 13 years ago, ShareTown started off as a technology company, basically a platform where people could buy, sell, rent, and share within their community. Think about Facebook Marketplace before Facebook Marketplace existed. That's really what we were creating. And we had gotten a good footprint established with our app and kind of moved forward. But that is a massive undertaking to, you know, make it a real app launch and grab hold. And we'd gotten around 2 million users, but not enough to generate some significant revenue. And so we'd run out of money, and we're kind of deciding what to do next. And at that point, it happened to be a very pivotal point. We had a good friend that worked for a mattress company, one of these innovative bed-in-the-box companies, and had told us that, hey, we have this issue getting the mattresses picked up. We're selling great, but this little hiccup, the charities don't want them. They want money. They don't want a 150-pound mattress, you know, to put in their warehouse. Do you think we can get them picked? Do you think you could figure out a way to get them picked up? And I said, sure. Yeah, I can do it. Absolutely. And I was actually the first one to go pick up one of these mattresses in Las Vegas. That's where I was living at the time. I convinced my husband to go with me. I didn't have any idea what to expect when I got to the customer's house, and it was 150 pounds. This particular mattress was made of some interesting material, some gel. It was very hard to like maneuver, and, you know, dragged it across the driveway and stuck it in the back of my Tahoe. And that was the first pickup. And so eight years later, we do tens of thousands of these, and pickup for basically every bed in the box brand there is. And we've made a business of it and then been able to expand into other big and bulky items as well.
That's amazing. So let me make sure I understand how the business works today. You're no longer taking the Tahoe to somebody's house and picking up the mattresses. You have a network of, what is it, like 1,800 people or something like that?
Yeah, like I think last I was aware, I think it was like 1,500 contractors nationwide service every major metropolitan area. So we have contractors that go and pick up these returns. They are also required to warehouse them and clean, sanitize, refurbish them, and then also resell them. And so everything that gets picked up primarily stays within the same location that it was picked up in. So suddenly we don't have any costs to ship things across country. Really great sustainability story for both us and for the brands that we work with. Because truly we're, I think I told you before that the averages from pickup from the customer to the secondhand customer is on average 13 miles from pickup to resell, which to me is just amazing. Just to think about the footprint, right? Like it's pretty amazing what we've been able to accomplish.
13 miles. So somebody calls and they're like, hey, this product's not going to work out for me. Somebody, one of the contractors comes to the house, they pick it up. They may have to warehouse it for a little bit. And then what are they doing? Put it on like Facebook Marketplace?
Yeah. So we don't ever compete directly with the brand through websites or anything like that. Everything is through secondhand marketing and it's a one-on-one transaction. So we're individuals, the contractors are individuals selling to other individuals. And so we really value the brands that we work with. We don't want to compete directly with them. But what's been probably one of the more interesting things that we've seen that have helped the brand is we get customers for the brand at price points that they wouldn't have been able to afford previously. Maybe they couldn't afford the $4,000 mattress, but they were able, through the secondhand market, they were able to purchase it. And now they are a raving fan and they tell everyone, right? They tell everyone, oh, you need to buy this mattress. This is what I sleep on. It's amazing. It's changed my life. And suddenly you have people posting in social media about how much they love their mattress. And they actually bought it secondhand because they couldn't afford that mattress brand new. And you're actually driving sales because I think especially for bed in the box online purchases, reviews are everything. So.
Yeah, there's no doubt reviews are everything. So just you get a bunch of mattress nerds that listen to the show like myself, business builders, retailers, manufacturers, suppliers. So for the business minded people out there, I want to make sure I understand how the model works. So like we said, pick it up. You got the contractor, it's individual selling to another individual. And what happens is, does that local contractor keep part of the money? Part of the money goes back to ShareTown. Does the brand have to pay for this? How does that all work?
Yeah. So depending on just each individual deal has been different up to this point, depending on how strong the brand strength is how well we're able to sell it on the secondhand market. And then also what the beginning cost of the mattress is. And so, yes, the contractor actually doesn't make any money unless they sell it. And ShareTown also doesn't make any money unless they sell it. Occasionally, brands will pay ShareTown to go get stuff picked up because their resale value isn't high enough. And so there is some money exchange there. It really depends on the brand and the resale value in the secondhand market, how we work it out. But what I do know is 100% of the time, we're a way better solution than what anyone else has found for this. Cheaper, saves a ton of money. Able to share that sustainability story. It impacts the manufacturer or the mattress brand in such a positive way that I have yet found a better solution that anyone's using.
Are some of these local contractors just like making bank, or is it like side hustle or what?
Yeah, I mean, we proposition it as a side hustle. That's the other thing that I think fairly fascinating is these contractors look like you and me. They have 80% have college, some college education. They usually have a full-time job, are usually, you know, white collar, maybe accountants, teachers. And then they want to make some extra money on the side, nights and weekends. So, you know, thinking I got kids going to college, or I would need to pay off some medical debt, or I would like to go on a vacation eventually. So they can, you know, work 10 hours a week and substantially increase their income. And so we do have some contractors that have made it a full-time position for themselves, depending on the area that they live in and the amount of need that they have in that area. But yeah, most of them are just side hustle, white collar, you know, college educated people.
I would imagine the people that are making the most money are the people in probably more populated areas or areas that experience higher returns. Have you looked at the data? Are there certain areas of the country where, like, wow, they experience a higher return rate for mattresses and boxes?
I think it would make sense to anyone in the industry to know that it's just going to be metropolitan areas, right? California, New York, parts of Florida, right? It's just higher population density. There's higher returns. It seems like that's pretty straight across the board. I'm sure it would very much parallel the sales data, right? Where the sales are the most, the returns are the most. I do think it's fascinating that you sell more queens in, you know, the city than you do in, say, Texas, where there's houses are big, rooms are bigger. You know, so I have found that fascinating just in returns data to be like, oh, we get a lot more kings and Cal Kings in Texas than, say, LA, right? Because just the way the demographic is or the way the population lives, I think that's pretty fascinating.
Have you come across any data points along the way as the business grew that you said, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is the way it is? Or any inflection point you can think of where you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this was going to present itself.
I mean, I think that's all business is. Data points, you're like, oh, this is a surprise. I had no idea that this was going to happen. You know, I think what was really fascinating, I don't think anyone would have suspected this during kind of that shutdown period in 2020. There was like a 2-week period that I think most of us, at least this is how I felt, was like, will I have a business after these 2 weeks? Like, everything's kind of grinding to a halt. I'm not sure what's going to happen. And then right after that, we doubled overnight. Who knew that during that period of time, everybody would order a new mattress, that everybody would be laying in bed, and that everybody wanted to redecorate their house? I don't think anyone could have predicted that. I feel very fortunate, grateful, blessed. I happen to be in an industry that, weathered it so well and was able to come out like much bigger and better because of it. I know that not everyone was that fortunate, but to be in that niche at that precise time seemed like a huge blessing. Like, oh wow, like who knew that during that period of uncertainty that you know, something could grow and be exciting. And also because we'd always been an online company, a remote company, there was no transition point for us. There was no, like, other than having to scale because we need more employees to help with the increase of what we were seeing. That was a pain point that we all face at some point, right? But I think that was the most surprising thing is I remember thinking, telling my team, if you don't have to work right now during those couple of weeks, I'm like, don't make up work to work. Like, I don't know what this is going to look like in a month if we're going to have to do layoffs or whatever. You know, I was getting a little just unknown, but then suddenly it was, you know, all hands on deck. And I remember working, you know, being one of those workers that was working twice as much as I had before.
Here on the FAM podcast, talking with Georgia Levitt, co-founder of ShareTown. It is a reverse logistics company, and you were well into your business before you even knew that term. Take us through that.
I actually went to a reverse logistics conference in Las Vegas 2 years ago, and it was fascinating to me as I sat in the conference and heard all these terms that they were using. I was like, oh, that's what that's called. Oh, now I know. And mainly that's just because we had our heads down. Like my head was down in the business, just trying to execute and solve problems day in, day out. And because we were dealing this with first bed in the box companies, they were new to it as well, right? This wasn't a traditional manufacturing mattress companies that had done these for years and years. And this is how you always, you know, there's brick and mortar and you pick it up and you send your 3PL out and you go get this and then they don't like it, then they return it this way. Like that just process didn't exist. And because the new industry was new, we were able to do it this way. I think if we had come up with this idea and then started pitching it to people that had been in the industry for a couple decades, it would have never taken off. It would have been too new, too confusing. You know, I think it really had to be that we partnered with people that were also new, and all they knew is that they needed to solve the problem, and they were happy not to not be calling 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Maybe I shouldn't say their name, but you know, I mean, that was the real solution at that point. It was like they got to call the junk company to come throw it away, and that was their real solution. So occasionally Salvation Army could come get it, but they were filling up. Certain states didn't want it at all. So they were bound by like state regulation, you know, state regulation. So just even figuring it out, what we really did and the terminology behind it was fascinating to me. And so I think it was hugely influential in the way we set it up, that we didn't know what it was called, that I had no idea, to our benefit. And then eventually it was important to know what it was called because we wanted to grow and we wanted to get more established businesses and we wanted to be able to speak their language. And we wanted, when people were able to search for us, we wanted to be able to answer their questions, you know? So it was, I think it happened in the exact right way. But it is kind of fascinating to, you know, develop something that you're like, I didn't know that's what we called it. Really.
But you're right. I mean, so many of the roll pack mattress companies, you know, they were digitally native. A lot of them were marketers early on, and they were having manufacturers do contract manufacturing for them. But ultimately, you know, they were responsible for the customer service and the returns, you know, not the contract manufacturer necessarily. And so you had a real problem. And like you said, you probably had a significant number of people that didn't speak that language originally as well. And so they're like, we just need this problem solved. Like when somebody returns a mattress on the other side of the country, we just need to be able to get rid of it or find it a new home. So it sounds like it all happened in the right way at the right time. You're a private company. Is it a pretty big business now? I mean, how many employees do you have?
I think right around 80.
Fully distributed, or you have like a big office someplace?
No, we're fully distributed. We've always been remote, do quarterly like meetups with like the executive team and management team. And we rotate where those are done, but yeah, fully remote, always have been remote, which has been, you know, really to our advantage, especially with, like I talked about previously, when the world kind of paused. There's, you know, always issues that come up when you don't have a ton of FaceTime and you're growing really large. And so then you're trying to figure that out. But really, really good people that work there. We've had some great success and continue to grow year after year, adding big accounts. So we've expanded past just roll pack mattresses. We do furniture, exercise equipment, pizza ovens. So really trying to just harness that big and bulky and have a great sustainability story about keeping things in the local economy, you know, just that circular economy, but making it as tight as possible. We're keeping that, you know, that carbon footprint just to bare minimum if we can. Truthfully.
Yeah, 13 miles, you said, that's absolutely inconceivable, I think, for a lot of people, because, you know, to return a mattress in the past, you know, who knows what they were doing, you know, sending it back across country or warehousing until it became very apparent that was going to be cost prohibitive. And now this, what an amazing solution. So I'm curious, pizza ovens, furniture, exercise equipment, mattresses, out of those categories, which products in which categories sell the quickest versus which ones take the longest to sell?
So mattresses, because we've gotten so good at it and it's been around so long for us, the resale on it is pretty quick, especially depending on the brand and the brand value. In the secondhand market, it kind of follows, I would say, what the initial sales are like. You know, the leaders in sales right now are the leaders in sales in the secondhand market. You have a great brand recognition, it's going to sell quickly. We also see furniture sells very quickly, you know, couches, tables. That's just what people look for in the secondhand market. So it's a, you know, hot commodity when you have very nice, we're picky with the brands that we work with. And so we carry really good brands. And so on the secondhand market, those resell really well.
Is there, so I know I'm not going to name any names, but I'm just curious. So from the mattress brands that you've worked with over the years, is there a clear winner? Well, maybe it's called a clear loser. Is there a brand that stands out above the rest in terms of this? There is a brand that experiences a much higher return rate.
No.
Hmm.
No, I would say not.
Interesting.
I would say that. I would say they're pretty neck and neck. There are some that experience a much lower return rate. But they're, you know, your big players, I think, are pretty neck and neck from what I can tell from my, like, I don't have all of the data, right? Because I can only guess at their sales data. So to be able to extrapolate what a return rate is for them isn't, you know, super scientific, because I don't have all data points, but from my point of view, I would say they seem pretty close. Like all the big manufacturers are right around the same.
Okay. So for the brands that experience that much lower return rate, what are the characteristics that you've noticed about the products or the companies? Is there anything that stands out in that category?
Yeah, I think you kind of nailed it when you were talking about initially when these Bed in the Box launched. They were primarily marketers. And so it's always about managing the customer experience, managing the return, helping them know what the products they're getting. It is a relationship. And I think when we recognize that the sales and the brand are all a relationship that we're trying to create, I think that probably has the biggest effect on a return. So I'm a marketing person by, like, that's my history. And so I pay a lot of attention to that. And so I can tell the customers that we work with. The other cool thing about the return experience is that we're talking to the brand's customers face to face during that exchange. And we always ask, so, you know, what didn't you like about it? Or what are you going to buy next? Not that we're, other than curiosity, we're not really collecting a ton of data on that. But I know I do. I want to know the customer experience for myself. I want to know what's happening with it. And so through that, kind of figuring out what the customer's journey's been, trying to understand that process, I think it has everything to do with brand relationship with their end customer. So making sure that they're delivering what the customer thinks they're getting, I think is everything.
Okay, so let's go there for a minute. What advice, you know, having had those conversations or been privy to the conversations that the independent reps have with customers, you're not maybe collecting all the data. A lot of it might be anecdotal, but what are those aspects of that customer relationship? You talked about maybe there's a bit of a disconnect between, hey, the customer thought they were getting one thing and they got something else. What advice would you give to the mattress in a box companies on how to do it better and reduce the return rates or enhance the customer experience?
Yeah, I think we way overcomplicate it. Customers are pretty simple. They don't really care about all the bells and whistles we think they do. They want a comfortable mattress at a reasonable price, and they want to be listened to. And if they have an issue, they want to feel like they can talk to somebody about it. I mean, it's really straightforward. That's one thing that I've appreciated about being kind of on the front lines is I feel passionately about customer service. And I know that some of the customers get really frustrated because they've been trying to return it for a long period of time and no one will respond to them, or they get put off, and that it just becomes a bad brand experience, period. One thing that ShareTown can do is that return experience. If you go to like our Google reviews, I haven't looked at it for a while, but I think the last time I looked at it, I have like 500 reviews. It's like 4.8, somewhere in there. All organic reviews. And people just rave about that experience. So they might have had a bad experience with the brand because they can't get someone to respond to them, or that return process. They're trying to save the return and they just have all these hoops that you're jumping through. But in the end, ShareTown comes in and it's a normal person coming and taking care of this problem, and they're getting their refund and their return, and they just feel this relief. They feel the relief, like I'm gonna get that $1,200 back, whatever the investment was into the mattress. I had a good experience with that person. They removed that item from my house. It was a cumbersome item that I couldn't just stick in a corner. Like, it's a mattress. You can't, in some places, they have nowhere to put it, right? And so having that good experience for the return actually really helps the brand. Because they don't differentiate us from the brand. They're not like, oh, I had this really poor experience with such and such mattress company. But ShareTown came in and fixed it. No, they still think we're the brand. Does that make sense? Like, so we're absolutely kind of saving that journey for that customer at the end. And that's really what you want. If a customer returns your item at the end, you want them to still have like, well, that didn't work out for me. That wasn't the right item, mattress, comfort level experience, but the brand was still good. They're still good to work with. It was easy enough to take care of the return. I think that's where we get into trouble, is like, by trying to save the sale, we create a poor experience and then we hurt our brand, and they'll think, I'm never buying something else from this company again.
Yeah. So we talk a lot on the brick and mortar side about that delivery process, mm-hmm. and like how that's your final touch point. And that can make or break your review. And if you're walking in with muddy shoes, or you bang up the walls or something like that. So this is like taking it a little bit farther forward in time. And I hadn't really thought about it from this perspective, but you end up being that final touch point for those brands. And you're right. They're going to associate that experience with the mattress in a box company. And they're going to be like, well, this is just an extension of them. And so that's going to impact, how people walk away feeling about it.
Yeah. I mean, I often use Costco as an example. I shop at Costco purely because they are so easy to return things with. I mean, I like Costco, but they're rich. They have a really robust return policy and experience, and that negates any problem I've ever had with anything I bought there. Right. Like, oh, I know I can return it. It's not a big deal. They won't give me any pushback. They're not trying to save the sale or whatever. Right. And that helps their brand immensely, right? And I think Bed in the Box have gotten it right because they have had these liberal return policies, because they do understand someone's purchasing a very large, expensive item sight unseen. And so we do need to make that return policy very liberal. And they've been good about that. I think they've gotten that part right. But saving the sale at the end, I think that's where they need to take a look on how hard are they making that return for the customer? Are they doing more damage? I don't know. I think that would be where I would look.
And like you said, the customer is not super complicated. They just want certain things to go the way that it should in a reasonable world.
Yeah. I mean, you think about a customer. We deal with mattresses all day. I feel like I'm a mattress nerd. I've touched hundreds of mattresses. I know all of the brands. Like, I know all the things. I know more than I should ever know about a mattress. But then you think about a customer, they only think about a mattress every 7 years, if they're being good about it, if they're actually like, I don't want this divot in my bed anymore. So some of them are super thorough and researching, and others are like, I just know I need one. And then they ask their friend, what do you sleep on? And then they go buy it. Right. So they don't care about all the bells and whistles like we think they do. They just want something comfortable. They want good brand recognition. They want it to be affordable. And then at the end of the night, truthfully, most of them will love their new mattress because it's new and it's not their crappy old mattress they used to sleep on.
That's always been the thing about mattress in a box. It shows up at the house and you're comparing it to one thing, and it's the mattress that you wanted to get rid of. So the odds of that winning are pretty good. And if that mattress doesn't win, bada bing, here's ShareTown to come in and help you out, save the day, and get that customer onto something else. Now, I'm curious about one more thing in the process. So what would you say, like, what percentage of time do people have another mattress in the house ready to sleep on that night whenever ShareTown comes to take away the one they don't want?
Yeah. So that's something we actually, it's unique with what we do, is because our contractor works directly with the customer to set up the return, ShareTown doesn't act as the middleman for that setup. The contractor talks to the actual customer. Through our app, we have a mobile app that we created that they can communicate with the customer, but they arrange the pickup around the arrival of their next mattress, because we do feel like that's the best customer experience.
I love that. I love that. That's very thoughtful. Well done, Georgia.
Hey, thank you. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, this is kind of what I would always tell my team. At the end of the day, we just want to make sure that the brands we work with are happy. And the brands are happy when we take good care of their customers. And if the brands are happy, the customer's happy, ShareTown's happy. Like, it's a really easy business model. The brand, take care of them, make sure that they're happy with our service, customers. You know, really, it's not overly complicated. But it served us really well. And in the end, like, our reviews are great. We've never lost a brand that we've worked with. And, you know, I always knock on wood when I say that. Once we sign with a brand, they're thrilled, ecstatic with what we do for them. So we just like to continue to grow that and to do more, really focused on the customer and, you know, as an extension of the brand, give them a good experience.
So before we wrap up today, how did a marketing person become an expert in reverse logistics? Like, how, I know you're running the business that was kind of like Facebook Marketplace before Facebook Marketplace. Was it really just out of that necessity of like, hey, the company ran out of money and like, I'm going to solve this problem? Or is this kind of your way? Is this what you do? Like, just put on your hat and solve different problems?
Yeah, that is probably my, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. It's turned out to be good in this case, but marketing has always been my passion and interest, but solving a problem is just how you do good business. And that's what I tell everyone that's in startup mode or, you know, side hustle mode. I'm like, it's literally just getting to one problem to the next and solving it. I happen to like creativity in doing that, but also like simplification. Like, let's not overcomplicate things. It's just, what would be the easiest way to solve this problem? And that might most likely be the right way to solve it. So.
Love it. What did I not ask you about your story that you want people to know?
Good question. It came down to a lot of trust, trusting people, like trusting. I remember initially it really was me asking friends and family to do this for me. That's how we started, is like, I have this really weird thing I'm going to ask you to do, but you can make money doing it. And because they trusted me that I would, you know, like not tell them to do something illegal or whatever, they gave it a try. They started making money and then they told their friends. We grew very organically for a long time before we put any marketing dollars behind it. And it really just came down to trusting people, right? Like, we had to trust the brands and then we had to trust these contractors. And then, you know, like, there's a lot of trust put into the customers on these, you know, returns. So it really, I think, you know, it's a company built on trust and trying to just do the right thing over and over and over thousands of times. It's built up to a pretty cool thing.
What's next?
For me, I've got some things that I'm throwing around. I haven't picked anything yet exactly. I've just been doing a little consulting on the side. I like being creative and I like being busy. But I think my family's enjoyed me being home more and cooking dinner. I think that's been a luxury. I'm excited to see what's next. I'm not quite sure yet.
Well, it's a great story. Thank you for sharing it here on the FAM podcast. If anybody wants to get connected, you have a unique spelling for Georgia. It's J-O-R-J-A, J-O-R-J-A. Levitt. You can find George on LinkedIn.
Yes.
And ask any question that I may have left on the table. Hey, if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, give us a like, give us a review, thumbs up on YouTube. We're on YouTube and all over the other places as well. Georgia, thank you so much for being on the show. And we'll have to connect with you at some point in the future to figure out what you've cooked up next, besides dinner for your family at home, which I know they're really appreciating, and what creativity you're applying in some other industry that maybe you don't even know the name of what it is, like reverse logistics.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
Thank you.